Good morning, this is The Third Degree, 2SER's Environment and Social Justice Half Hour. I'm Simon Unwin, and on the show today, the Federal Court gives the go-ahead for the expansion of the Olympic Dam uranium mine in South Australia. And in Argentina, the government has renationalised one of the country's largest oil companies. First this morning, this is a court case that was called a David and Goliath-style battle, but that doesn't give the credit owed to Kevin Buzzacott, Arabana elder from Lake Eyre. He was taking on BHP Billiton, the state of South Australia, and the Federal Environment Minister. But Kevin Buzzacott is still a force to be reckoned with. He has a long history of holding governments and industry to account and campaigning against uranium mining on his land, both in and out of the courts. The planned expansion of the uranium, copper and gold mine near Roxby Downs will see a phenomenally large-scale open-pit mine, a mine that will take 6 years just to excavate. Olympic Dam is currently an underground mine. The federal court decision was handed down on Friday, ruling against Kevin Buzzacott's challenge, and you're about to hear him in conversation with The Third Degree's Jess Minchell.
We were expecting something like that to happen because none of us ever won before in the court. We've never had a big win. So this Indenture Act allows them to go ahead and do whatever they want to do, take more water from the Lake Eyre Basin and the tailings dam. That was one of the issues we took up because it's like the tailings dam sitting on top of the earth. It's like a waste dump. Myself, I'm worried about the sacredness, the sacred country that suffers, just gets desecrated because of this big development.
You said before, when we were organising this interview, that the decision was a bit of a kick in the guts, but a good kick in the guts. What's the plan now?
Well, see, we've got 14 days to appeal this one. And I think if you appeal it, I think the next then you go to the High Court. But I've got to work this out with the lawyers and a few of the mob out there to whether we're going to do it. I guess this is one of the scare tactics they do too. So this is why the case is dismissed. Hopefully this is one way of shutting you up, and they're talking about bankrupting me and... Yeah. There's all that that goes with it. And if you're trying to have a go at these mob or getting some questions answered, this is the fear tactic they put into you.
So BHP have said that they will ask you to pay their legal costs.
Because at the moment I've got another case going on as well. I've taken, Monday week I go to court in South Australia. I've taken in the Supreme Court of South Australia. I've taken on the state. South Australia and the Minister for Mineral and Resource Energy here.
And is that about? Is that about the expansion of Olympic Dam as well?
That's about the same thing. Those ask the questions, uncertainty questions about. We're saying that they didn't do the proper stuff and they breached their law as well by not actually doing the groundwork and the environment and what happens to uranium, where it goes, and the tailings dam, the waste, and this big, huge hole that they'll have in the ground to be the biggest in the world, and the ongoing, after they've dug it up and moved on, is still going to leave that place pretty toxic for thousands and thousands of years after. And also it's situated in the big sacred area where the Dreaming Tracks, Dreamtime Stories, so that's going to be all done as well. So that's the big concern.
So have you, as you've said, the two aspects of your court challenge a few weeks ago were that the export of uranium was not included in when they assessed the environmental impact of the mining, and also that they didn't take into account the storage of mine tailings in above-ground tailing ponds.
Yeah, it's like you sell the stuff and it goes with, you know, the safety, where it's got to go and how it goes, whichever company buys it, what they do with it. We don't know what happens to it. There's no, and whether this environment or the sea or anywhere gets polluted or if it should there be an accident. Like recently, there was a train full off the bridge up north there. And if this should happen with the freight train load of uranium, well, the people up there, wherever it goes, if there's a derailment or an accident, they'd be, their country would be poisoned for the, whatever thousands of years.
So we
pretty critical stuff. People are really concerned out there. They're really, I mean, a lot of people are glad I've taken this up, you know what I mean?
So with the court cases, you started with the federal approval of the expansion, and now you're taking a step back towards the state level and arguing on the same terms. Is that correct?
Yes, the same, similar terms. Maybe this could be a little bit bigger. I'm not too sure because it's bringing it back to the scene of the crime, which is South Australia. We had a go at the federal side and they threw us out, and now it's bringing it back to the old state of South Australia. We're going to ask some questions there. We hope that we might get a better hearing, a better, bit more headway from the judge there. We don't know. We won't know until they do the same thing, the outcome of it.
What are you most worried about if this planned expansion does go ahead?
I think if this expansion go ahead, it'd be a very sad day for me, because I know me and my people, my country will suffer, because we're born from them, not far from that area. We that's our ancient cultural place, and we're burial grounds and everything around the place. So all that would be destroyed in some way, and also everybody should know what uranium is by now, how deadly it is. Remember Fukushima and Nagasaki and all these other places. And also Marilyn, the bomb tests. And so this stuff, and it's used in the wars. So thousands and thousands, millions of people out there have been killed by this stuff already. And there will be millions of people killed in the next, you know, the ongoing stuff of this, because it's been proven that uranium, it can't be mined and it can't be travelled. It's such a deadly substance that I think the human beings touched don't even know what they were playing with, if I can say that.
How has the mining of uranium changed, or has it changed the way you view your country, say, in terms of seeing it as perhaps toxic or contaminated?
I think it's not only, I mean, it could happen any place. I mean, I think nobody wants a uranium mine or mining company pipelines draining the, in this case, the Lake Eyre Basin. It's a sacred area by itself, and nobody wants their area to be environment to be contaminated, poison, whatever the word is, and our country, and also the brother and sister country where the mine is, that's going to be affected for years and years to come. And someone said there's about 10,000 generations down the track are going to feel it, going to cop it. So it's like it's all right for us today, living today, to do all this stuff, but we're going to leave all this damage for the kids down the track. And that's, a lot of people are really worried about this. And also the way it goes to travel, if it can travel through people's towns and cities all around the country. In this case, I think it's going to be going north with the new railway line up to Darwin and transferred on to other places. Like I said, should there be an accident, people who's innocent don't even know much about it. They think they're living in a good little town up the road there, but that'll be all contaminated should there be an accident or a spillage. And like I said, they've got to bring it back as well. They're talking about bringing the waste back into the country as well, and people are getting upset about all that as well. So I don't know how other way you can get through to these people. You know, they seem to have got the drop on us with their laws and courts and whatever. And they make you sound like you're a criminal or a bad person. And yet they're the people who's digging up the land and wrecking everything. And whereas us, we have cultural obligations, responsibilities, we're 40,000 years old. We're trying to keep our role and look after our land. And for the future generation without having bloody toxic uranium around the place. And so, we're really concerned, really concerned.
I guess contamination of land anywhere for people all over Australia is quite a scary idea and impacts the way that we, say, view our backyards or our local area. But I was wondering if there's an added significance as a traditional owner in terms of, say, connection to land or the importance of land.
Look, it's gut-wrenching, really. I mean, it's really rips your heart out when you know the land and you know it's... then you go out the next day and you see it desecrated. And in this case, just what's going to happen with this big open expansion, there's going to be miles and miles of tailings dam. There's going to be... All this country's going to be dug up and more water's going to be sucked out of the Lake Eyre Basin, apparently, and then they're going to be dragging water up from the sea. They've got big plans to do all this. And, it is nerve-wracking, actually. The old desert is just as good and beautiful as the cities, I guess, but we know the desert. It's hard when you know the desert and you know how beautiful it is and you want to keep it that way. You don't want it to be destroyed or dug up in whatever form. And it's really sickening, actually.
Were you also challenging the approval of taking such significant amounts of water as part of this court case?
We argued about it for so long, but because we're only poor people, we haven't been able to equip ourselves to do research as how much water that took, what effect it's got. But we can see the country's been affected. We can see the trees and the bushes and water holes are not there anymore. That only happens since they got two big pipelines, Borefield A and Borefield B, that takes this water out. And this water also is sacred. It's from the old country. It's from, and it's really old water, especially to be used and treated as for uranium. There's 42 million litres per day going over there. So that's a lot of water.
And what are the mound springs looking like at the moment?
They used to flow like no other before. They used to flow all over. Now they've gone right back down. We've lost a couple of little other springs because of that amount of water. It's just too much. And it's not only that, it's not used for that purpose. If it's used for an animal or drinking or, you know, that's fine, bathing in it or something. But this just uranium stuff, it's totally different. It just goes against all our beliefs anyhow. And plus, that you can't go there because they've all owned that land, they bought land, they've took over a lot of their land up there where they expect to do all this expansion stuff, and it's like we'd be trespassing that stuff as well, and it's just full on. One day I hope that the people will wake up, and like I said, there's a lot of people who do care about this. It's just not my fight. It's everybody else should be in this fight as well, or argument march, putting it to the minds and the ministers and the government about why they're doing this, you know. It's just about greed, selfishness. But they're totally chucking our values out, like what is our sacred site? How do you measure how much a mountain is a sacred mountain or a sacred lake? What price do you put on that? And you know, these people are just worried about ripping up the ground, getting all the resources out of there. And these are the people who's taken all of my valuable treasures, so to speak, not that I mind it, but you know what I mean? They're making heaps off of that. And so, anyhow, it's pretty full on at the moment.
And it, you said it's a fight, but it's also been a very long fight for you.
It's been a long time. I've been in and out of court. I guess I get used to being dismissed, so it doesn't affect me. But I think one day someone will go in there and I think we will win. I mean, the funny thing, this thing speaks for itself. This decision, there's this federal minister, South Australian state, BHP Billiton, and now the federal court chucks me out like it's, you know, like I'm stirring and that, but I've got my values and, you know, I'm really concerned about this. I've got kids and families that I'd like to have a good environment, a good, fresh, clean environment, like many, so many others. And we know about Fukushima and how radiated that place is at the moment. I think people can't even live there. They can't go back there for a long, long time. And I think since then the people are really waking up a bit.
That was Kevin Buzzacott, an Arabana elder from Lake Eyre in South Australia, speaking with the Third Degree's Jess Minchell. Now to Argentina, where the government of President Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner has taken back the country's largest oil company, seizing a controlling share from the Spanish company Repsol. YPF was Argentina's national oil company until Argentina went through one of several privatisation programs in the 90s. The renationalisation of the company is quite popular in Argentina, but the move's drawn widespread criticism and warnings verging on threats from the Spanish government, credit agencies, trade bodies and the EU. There's no word yet on what compensation Repsol might be awarded. To understand the context and reasoning behind such a dramatic decision, 2SER's Shant Fabricatorian spoke to Luis Costa, an Argentine social researcher for Ipsos Public Affairs.
Can you just tell me a little bit about the motivation and the context behind the renationalisation of YPF? Why has the government and President Kirchner gone ahead with this move, and why now?
Well, you know, in Latin America, all things related with oil, it's been a big issue related with the feelings of the people about its history. So all things related with nationalization, the relationship between this country with what we all call as, in an old-fashioned way, as the imperialism, it's always a big feeling that most of the people think that Argentina should be the owner of all this. On the other hand, the point of why now and not before. This particular government has been doing many things, positioning against the biggest economies in the world. Particularly, it's been very aggressive against the IMF and the World Bank. So the discourse of the present government and the discourse of Cristina Kirchner has been particularly against what they call as the economic power of the world. And in a way, a lot of economical decisions have been taken considering what the public opinion thinks about some things. The energy that the politics needs, it's what the people think, because these are those who are going to vote for them in the future election.
The president has justified this on the basis that we are doing what is in the interests of the Argentinian people, not in the interests of the US or the Spanish government or whoever else.
Yes, that's a key part of the discourse. And if you compare the discourse of the most of Latin American government now, they are having this position, they are saying this in all things.
I guess Argentina in some ways has a reputation for bucking conventional wisdom on economic matters. I think it's fair to say that this was true of their default in 2001. I think the majority of global economic opinion said that this was going to be a disaster for the country, that it would take them years and years to recover, that no one was ever going to be prepared to lend to them anymore, and all of these kinds of doomsday predictions. How has that played out in the decades since? What has Argentina's economy, what has its performance been like in the last decade or so?
If you study the history of Argentinian economy, being highly linked with ups and downs, So in an historical way, you can find the 2001 crisis, but just one more episode in our history, in our economical history. So you can see us involved in a big chain of troubles and problems. And every time Argentina went down with this kind of problems in economy, a new government appeared that's always been part of our history. A new government appeared, and this government find a way to recover the economy, basically founded on the development of internal consumption, because Argentina is, in a way, it's not a first world country, it's not a developed country, but it's also not a very poor country. We are like in the middle. So we have our own industry. In a way, in natural things, Argentina is very rich. We can give to the people here, for the internal consumer, a lot of products. We don't need too much from things from abroad. The biggest secret of this government is that the growing of the internal economy is basically based on the internal consumer, and of course, the high levels of the prices of the soy in the world, right?
This dependence on internal demand, internal consumption, does give the government a little bit of leeway in it being able to forge its own path economically. I guess there has also been a lot of commentary in terms of this nationalisation of YPF is going to deter foreign investment from Argentina. Is that a concern that is evident within Argentina itself? Are there sort of business groups or economists within Argentina who say that this is going to be a bad move in the long run?
If you recall what all the people have been saying, economic specialists during the last 10 years, Argentina is always facing a period where the international investment is not going to be part of our local production. Everybody's trying to foresee what is going to happen in Argentina. And in most of the cases, let me tell you that they were wrong. And you can see the numbers of the growing of the country. I would split the situation in two parts, what the common people think and what the specialists in economy think. If you see the common people, most of the people agree with the decision of the nationalization of YPF. That's the major concern of the national government, to have the people happy about their decisions. And I think that, on the other hand, considering what the economic specialist thinks or the investors, what they think, I think that maybe now there is a lot of uncertainty, because obviously every time you have a government that plays an important role controlling what is happening in the economy is a problem for them. But I think that the other way for understanding the situation is that this is just a specific decision concerning only YPF. Obviously, the government plays an important role trying to control what is happening in the local economy, you know, the problem with the inflation, problem with the local prices of everything. But I think that as time goes by, they will discover that this is just one particular thing. And I think that the industries that are more on the government's target are those related with services. You know, all these companies 30 years ago were companies of the national state, and now they are private.
There is a lot of poor sentiment in Argentina amongst ordinary voters, as you say, towards the austerity measures that were imposed by the World Bank or imposed by the IMF. Politically speaking, this renationalisation of YPF is a very popular move, as you say. Is that sort of partly to do with it, that there is ongoing resentment towards neoliberal policies within Argentina?
I think that those concepts related with which kind of school related with economy or economical policy of the country, I think that's too much specific about related with the public opinion. The public opinion knows the 90s ends up like a big disaster, and people think that those things are related with the idea of having an economy without the presence of the state. If it's a neoliberal theory or whatever, that is part of the discourse of the specialist. Mm-hmm. But I think that what's in the people's mind is that for the development of economy and in Latin America, you need the presence of the state. You can't leave the economy of its own will.
I think it's fairly evident that the government in Argentina is not particularly bothered by international opinion or certainly what the Spanish government or the European Union think about this move. Is there any acknowledgement within the government that this could lead to an international backlash, or are they just prepared to put that to one side and ignore it?
I think that they are just ignoring. I mean, they are facing that this decision implies a lot of international disturb, of course, and you can see what the Spanish government is trying to do on the G20 and in Europe, you know, in the region. In political ways, this is a, I think that this is a very smart government. And I think that the local government reads the situation as, okay, the whole world is having a very big problem. They're not going to take care of what is happening in this lost country of Argentina. This is not really important now in the international scenario. In Europe, they have bigger problems than what is happening with YPF, and it's just a problem of Spain. And I think that the government doesn't care about what they think. I mean, they know that they are going to face maybe an international problem, but on the other hand, Argentina is... it's a free country and we can do whatever we want here. I mean, this is not what I particularly think, but this is the division of the government. You can do whatever you want. You can't have the intervention of other countries.
So that was Argentine social researcher Luis Costa speaking to Shant Fabricatorian there. It's certainly quite a long way from arguing about, say, the minerals tax in Australia. That is all we have time for this week on The Third Degree. I'm Simon Unwin. Thank you very much for joining us, and stay tuned to 2SER for The Daily.